I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show on this Halloween night. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Right now, the celebration continues. We're going to be talking about the Giants as they capture their World Series title the third time in 5 years. What a performance. I am so excited to have joining us in studio, of course, tonight is our producer, the very talented Andy Pondillo, who has tapped into his dark side, and he is dressed up in costume. What are you, Dead Mouse? Is that true?
Yes, I'm the famous DJ. Dead Mouse, light up eyes. I got the suit on, so we're going in full costume doing Halloween right.
Alrighty, I won't tell of our listeners tonight what I'm wearing, but Andy, I'm very anxious to get your thoughts on Madison Bumgarner. In my mind, I would believe that he is, what, the greatest World Series pitcher of all time? What a performance.
He's got to be the greatest World Series pitcher of all time at this point. Now, there have been pitchers that have made starts as good as Madison Bumgarner. One, two. But we're going through three different World Series championships. His ERA, I believe, under 0.26 in World Series play. Not to mention winning Game 7 with those five scoreless innings of relief. You will never see this again in the modern era of baseball. Bruce Bochy pulling out the Joker card out of his deck with this one, because hey, this is something you just do not see in this era of baseball. He pitches a complete game shutout, comes right back out, and shuts down the Royals. Madison Bumgarner won this World Series. He had to be about 60% of the reason why the Giants won this World Series.
Did you know that he was capable of doing this? I mean, as you just said, I mean, he threw a complete game 3 days earlier, and as I was thinking, you know, hey, he's just going to come in, he's going to throw a few innings, but he finished it out.
I knew he was capable of being a very good pitcher. We've seen him mature in front of our eyes. Only 25 years old, but you think he's 35 years old with the maturity that he shows on the mound. 2010, he's the third, fourth guy in the rotation. He gets some outings, not a ton, but you see how dominant he could be in that playoff season. He come back in 2012. Now he's the number two guy under Matt Cain. Matt Cain, obviously dominant. Madison Bumgarner, a good complementary piece of the team. Now at 25 years old, Matt Cain hurt. Madison Bumgarner bumped up to the number one. It was just the maturity you saw out there. He's a good product of a great system with the Giants, how he's been able to work his way up to the top, become the guy. But you just cannot expect anybody on this planet to come out and throw five scoreless innings right after a shutout. It's just the law of averages. Eventually, you think that their stuff is not going to be as effective. It doesn't mean they're not going to be good, but you just do not expect a guy to come out and dominate like he did time in and time out.
Okay, he's only 25. If you had a lefty to pick, if it was Clayton Kershaw or Bumgarner, who would you pick?
I'm taking Bumgarner immediately, and it's no knock on Kershaw. I mean, we all want to tear him apart because of his postseason outings. There's no reason to say Kershaw doesn't figure it out. Roger Clemens had some tough, rough postseason outings as well. I believe his postseason ERA was in the four, so it's not unheard of to see a guy struggle like that in postseason play. Right now, Kershaw's still got a lot to prove to me that he can be that big-game pitcher, and as young as he is, he will have more opportunities for the Dodgers to right his wrongs. But as of right now, I would rather lose five or six more regular season games if that's what it meant to have a better postseason pitcher, a Madison Bumgarner, a guy that's already a top four or five pitcher in Major League Baseball. You add the postseason accolades, I'm going to take a few extra losses in that regular season, because this guy is doing things in postseason baseball that we've never seen before.
Well, he's certainly a guy you can bank on. In your mind, based on what we have seen, Andy, are the Giants now, are they a dynasty?
You know, the dynasty word's thrown around a lot. A lot of people have different meanings for it, but basically the meaning I've seen is you win several championships in a short year span. You know, we call the New England Patriots a dynasty for their three Super Bowls. You had to call the Yankees a dynasty, and they won them all in a row. You know, I think more people think about dynasty when you can do them in a row. However, 3 and 5 years, I got to say it is. It's one of the most impressive feats we've seen. And in the times that we see in baseball right now, so challenging to win it multiple seasons like that. There's so much parity. There's so many injuries with the pitchers. And the Giants being able to overcome key injuries this season from Pagan to Matt Cain, and Bochy always finds a way to do it. You got to say it is. Three World Series championships in 5 years. It's just so hard to do in the modern game.
Well, we talked about this with legendary sports writer Bob Ryan earlier on our show about having sustained success. What do you think has been the key for the Giants? Because like you're saying, every other year they're having success.
The thing is, they always have somebody to step up. Marco Scudero goes out this year. They go through second baseman after second baseman after second baseman, a gaping hole on the field. They figure out their problem with Joe Panik, who might have saved the World Series with an excellent play in Game 7 to start a double play, diving play down the middle of the field. So they find guys to fill these slots. Matt Cain goes down with an injury. Brian Sabian goes out, makes a trade. He gets Jake Peavy, not as good in postseason play, but without Jake Peavy down the stretch for the Giants posting a 2.14 ERA, they're not going to get into postseason play to begin with. So Jake Peavy became a pivotal deal for the Giants to make it to postseason play and to have a chance to be in the driver's seat. So I think it's a lot of the moves they've made have really blossomed. You even go back to 2010, Aubrey Huff, a veteran they put in there. He bats third, bats fourth. He's able to deflect some of the attention to Buster Posey. Buster Posey, a young guy. He needs another guy in the middle of the order. Pablo Sandoval started to make his move in 2012. Where he becomes the big postseason game hitter. There's so many heroes for this team. You don't feel like one or two guys have to produce. If their bats go silent, if one guy gets lit up like Tim Hudson was going to in Game 7, you know there's always somebody behind them that can produce, and there's always somebody that they can bring in from the minors via trade. It's just they got this system, and I'd compare it to the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA, that it's a part of the system. When you come into San Francisco, you know you're going to succeed, and what's even more bizarre is how it's every other year, but you know that they're going to fix their problems year in and year out.
Okay, so break down the series, because it certainly had, it was filled with a ton of drama in this playoff run.
It was filled with tons of resilience from both teams. We've seen both teams just go at it with each other. We've seen blowout games. You know, the Giants put up 11-4. You think they're going to take and run away with this series, and then they lose 11-0 from the Royals. You see Madison Bumgarner throw a shutout 5-0, and then you see James Shields hang right with them. James Shields get roughed up the whole postseason, comes back, and looks like the James Shields we know. We see the young Ventura for the Royals make a name for himself. You feel bad for him because he's overshadowed by Bumgarner, but let's not forget this kid throwing 100 miles per hour looks like one of the best young pitchers we've seen in the game in a while. So you see tons and tons of different elements, and then these teams finding ways to score. Two teams that don't hit home runs still able to find ways to create offense and at times look very dominant at the plate. I think it was a well-played series. There was very few mental mistakes. There were some games that got away from these teams. That's just pitching. That's just baseball. Sometimes you get blown out. That's why it's a 162-game season.
True.
That's why it's a 7-game series. It gives you a true victor, and I think it was very fitting that the last game was a pitching-oriented game, 3-2, a battle of the bullpens.
Okay, we're breaking it all down with Andy Pondillo right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, doing a recap. A full recap of the World Series. We will be right back, and much more at YSR. You stay close. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We're going one-on-one with our producer, Andy Pondillo at YSR. A number of things that I still want to hit on from the World Series. Bruce Bochy, 3 World Series. Gosh, I mean, that would put him in elite company and the likes of what, say, Joe Torre?
Yeah, you got to put him in as some of the greatest managers that we've seen in baseball history. His 4th World Series, he's won 3 of them now, going back to the Padres days. And, you know, not even only the World Series, but all the successful teams he's had, he's done a lot with less. And you look at Joe Torre, great years over there with the Yankees too, but he had some pretty loaded up teams where I feel like Bruce Bochy has found ways to win time and time again. This managerial job he did with the Giants this year might be one of the greatest I've ever seen. What he did in the World Series, he said, I have Madison Bumgarner, my pitching's beat up, they're old, they're tired, and, you know, flat out, we don't have as much pitching as we used to. He still finds a way to win the World Series title. I think when you look at Bruce Bochy, you need to look at his run to the World Series this year as one of the greatest feats we've seen as a manager in the big leagues.
Well, he's the 10th manager to win three World Series. Now, let's transition. Let's talk a little bit as far as some of the leaders with the Giants. Hunter Pence, I mean, he certainly was incredible in terms of his motivation and really capturing these guys' hearts and minds.
Oh, yes, $90 million contract before the season. It's already paying dividends the first year in it. This guy is just a natural player. We've seen this in Houston when he was with the Astros. He gets traded to the Phillies, gets traded to the Giants. Everywhere he goes, he's loved by his teammates, a clubhouse motivator. And, you know, there's guys that are clubhouse motivators and there's guys that do it on the field. He does both. He comes through in the World Series batting nearly 500. It's hard to believe the guy bats 500, but it's not going to be enough to win the World Series MVP because we're talking about Madison Bumgarner. Two strikes in a count, no matter. He's batting, I believe, over 600 in the World Series with two strikes in a count. So he did a little bit of everything. Great defense out there. Sprays the ball all over the field. Can steal a base here and there. He's that type of player that a lot of teams look for because he's a natural player that can do a little bit of everything. No, he's not going to be Mike Trout and be the best player in baseball, but he's going to be above average in everything he does. And you look for those guys because they're consistent.
You know, you really tip your hat, though, to Andy, to the Royals. I mean, they were so close, especially in Game 6. I mean, that incredible comeback.
It was an impressive run by the Royals. You know, you look at this team and you don't think they should. They have no reason being there. You could say the same thing for both of these teams. They had no reason to be in the World Series with the rosters they run out there, but they know how to play team baseball. They don't beat themselves. And most importantly, they take advantage over any crack they get. I think it's a good point to the other teams out in Major League Baseball that they can win with a, you know, marginal salary. They can win with building within the system. They can win without hitting 200 home runs a season. You know, we always look to try and build a team a certain way. What is the way you have to build a team to win a World Series? Well, there's a lot of ways you can squash the bug. And I think the best way to squash it is to build within the farm system, build a key unit of core young players and build them up together. And then try and sprinkle in the Jake Peavies of the world, the James Shields, the guys that are going to supplement those young guys and take you to the promised land.
Okay, Andy Pondillo from Yahoo Sports Radio, our producer, is joining us this evening on the Big E Sports Show in studio. And, you know, really when I think about the Giants and the Royals, they really give a sense of hope to so many of the other teams that are looking to go get over the hump. I mean, I'm thinking of the Astros right here in our backyard.
Oh, definitely. And you look at the Royals just a couple years ago, a losing team, but you saw the promise with the Royals very early. You saw a guy like Alex Gordon. You saw a guy, Billy Butler, the longest tenured player, of guys that are going to come up through the system. I don't know if they're ever going to be the big superstars again, but if you get enough of these young guys that play the game the right way, you're going to eventually start to turn that corner. Eric Hosmer, a very bright future for the Royals, a guy that can hit for power to all fields. You feel like some of these hitters on the team, they haven't even quite found it all the way yet. Alcides Escobar, finally starting to come into his own, a big-name prospect years back with the Milwaukee Brewers. They're all starting to find it a little bit here, and they're building that core that will allow them to sustain success. That is the hardest thing I feel like it is to do in baseball is build the core. We see teams that go, you know, they're changing their third baseman every other year. They're signing right. free agents to try and just fill gaps because they don't know what else to do. You know, it's become kind of the Dodger thinking on the other flip side, how they try to build a World Series champion. As soon as they find a hole, they go and sign a guy to a 6-7 year contract. I don't think that is the best method to fixing holes. You have to fix it within. The Royals, the Giants have done that. Now, if they can sustain success, it's going to depend how they spend. I'm concerned with the Royals and the fact that they need a little more power in that lineup. I think what they did is amazing. It's going to be hard to duplicate that run again unless they can start to generate more power, whether it's doubles hitters, whether it's home run hitters. If you get another right-handed bat in there, I think they could be right back where they were this year.
So how do you view continuity within a roster, Andy?
It's huge. I think that these guys have to be able to play together. And it's not like basketball. It's not like football where you're handing the ball off all the time on the field. At the same time, though, it's a 162-game season. There's a lot of highs and lows, and baseball is more mental than it is physical. So if you're going up there, you don't trust in your guys. Your pitcher doesn't trust in your catcher. Your pitcher doesn't trust in your outfielders. Everything is so marginal in these games. The smallest thing makes a big difference. The second baseman not being able to get to a ground ball because he's not positioned right. The shortstop not on the same page with the second baseman, can't turn a double play, allows three or four runs to score. Everything has an impact, and when these guys trust in each other, when these guys believe in the manager, their guys on the field, it's going to show in postseason play. And that's why I feel like a lot of times these $200 million payrolls just don't pan out, because when pressure is out there, when you are up against it, the teams that usually prevail are the teams that believe in each other.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Andy Pondillo, our very own, right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And I'd mentioned the Astros perhaps being inspired by the Giants and the Royals and their performance in the postseason. As we go into the offseason, I mean, they're going to be trying to figure out what are the key points that they're going to be trying to address.
Well, the thing is with the Astros that I always look to is they have started to fill that core. You have a very top-heavy team. Jose Altuve, George Springer, you're hoping John Singleton figures it out. You're hoping Appel figures it out down the minor leagues. This team has a core of players that could really be successful. Dallas Keuchel, Colin McHugh, there's depth there. But the problem is that maybe the bench guys, the bullpen, the bottom of the order, they're very lackluster in a lot of areas when it comes to depth. And to get through a 162-game season, you have to have depth. They figured out the hard part in getting this core built through the farm system. They're starting to find the major leagues. They're starting to find success. The tide is turning. I think this team can make a run at 500. They got to fix the bullpen. They've got to believe in themselves. The new manager, A.J. Hinch, he's going to have a lot of hard work to do. There's a lot of progress that still needs to be made with the Astros, but I think the ugly times are behind them. The good times are ahead. And when we talk about the Royals, they're a good team to look at as a barometer for how quickly you can find success. Astros are a very different team, though, in the way they score runs, in that they have a lot of power. They may not have some of the other things you want, such as getting on base, such as moving runners, but I feel like they have the hard part done, and that's very, you know, very difficult to find in today's baseball.
What is the philosophy of A.J.?
AJ's a bit of a sabermetrics guy. He's been in the front office, so he gets the analytical part of everything, and you have to under Jeff Luhnow because he's a very analytical general manager. They do things a very specific way, yet I feel like AJ also gets the human element to the game. So he's a good blend of both.
Good balance.
And, you know, he's realistic, too. I think he knows that the first step for this team is to get back to 500, and if they can get near that mark, I think the arrow is pointed in the right direction.
Well, he brings some substance and certainly some brains to the Astro. We're looking forward to seeing how it all unfolds. And Andy Pondillo on this Halloween night, it's always a pleasure to have you with us in studio. Thank you.
Always fun. Time to go trick-or-treating.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the fastest 2 hours in radio. We will be right back. Always the biggest and the very best in sports at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with our next interview, we want to connect with you. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Remember, twice is always nice. You can go back and listen to all of our amazing guests on our podcast page at yahoosportsradio.com. Well, right now, it is time to tee it up. We're going to completely shift gears and focus our attention on the wonderful world of golf. Chris Millard is the contributing writer at Golf World. Very accomplished, I would say, in his work. He has appeared in Golf Digest, the New York Times, the Masters Journal. And tonight, we decided to invite him on. We want to shine the spotlight on his new book. It is titled The Golf Book. And Chris Millard is joining us on our Stuart Cadillac guest line. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Good evening. How are you on this Halloween night?
I'm good, thank you, Alyssa. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm very anxious to talk about the game of golf. We always love to talk about it so much, but there's no doubt the sport is measured in centuries. The past two decades have truly been marked as the most compelling in terms of the transformation of the game. Share with our national audience tonight how you've just captured some of the best stories in this new book. I mean, it needs to be on everybody's coffee table.
Well, there was so much to choose from. I mean, if you look back over the last 20 years, anyone who's a golf fan really ought to count themselves lucky to be alive in the last 20 years, because you've had three really remarkable, really four incredible things happen. One is the creation of the Golf Channel. which gave us so much access and information on the game. The second is the arrival of Tiger Woods, really. The third would be sort of the evolution of the Ryder Cup from what used to be kind of a cakewalk into something that's really exciting to watch now. And the fourth would be the trends that we've seen in golf course architecture, which, you know, the overarching trend being back to minimalism. So there was a lot to write about. This book probably could have been 600 pages, but it's pretty hard to put in the stocking.
Well, it is indeed. It's a very special book, and I love the fact that you featured in the foreword. It was written by golf legend Arnold Palmer, and he shares, you know, just what a blessing the sport has been to him, the explosion of golf in Asia, and as you were just talking about and highlighting, I mean, the launching, him and Arnold, or Joe Gibbs, launched the Golf Channel in 1995.
Yeah, it seems like the Golf Channel just launched yesterday, and in fact, I just was 5 minutes ago, I completed a session, an interview at the Golf Channel, and it's amazing. The facility there is sort of mirrors the development of golf. If you've been to the Golf Channel studio in 1995, it was kind of like a homespun operation. And now, my goodness, their facility is remarkable. In fact, just today, while we were there doing the interview on the book, Arnold Palmer was there cutting the ribbon on the new cafeteria for the employees, which is called Arnie's Place.
Uh-huh.
Sort of, you know, it's just perfect that Arnold was there because it is his heart and soul. I mean, there's no argument from anyone at the Golf Channel that it wouldn't have happened without Arnold committing himself to the project.
The Golf Channel, no doubt about it. I mean, it is a Campbell favorite. Talk about what kind of impact it has had on the game of golf. I mean, you've got 24-hour news coverage. I mean, that is solely devoted to golf. I mean, it is the authoritative voice on the game.
Yeah, the impact that Golf Channel's had on the game is pretty enormous, really. I mean, it goes well beyond access. I mean, your family and my own family, you know, we love the tournament coverage and the news and the instruction. But, you know, it's given a global platform to the game. You know, just today, as I mentioned, being over there, they have a whole separate studio located in that building just for Golf Channel Japan. And so that's just one small way of pointing out how they've given this sort of global platform to the game 24/7. And, you know, you think about a young guy like Rory McIlroy. You and I grew up in an age when, you know, golf was on TV a little bit on Saturday and a little bit on Sunday, and that was it.
Right.
Rory McIlroy can't remember life without a Golf Channel. You know, he was, I think, 3 when the channel launched. So it's pervasive. It's really changed the way we enjoy and get information about the game.
Chris, what do you think has been the key to its success? I mean, as we were just saying, you know, it was launched in 95. It seems like it was yesterday, but it has really evolved quickly.
Yeah, I think the success of the Golf Channel is really based on demographics. Joe Gibbs was on to this early on when he first got the idea. And the thing about golf is, if you were to compare it to, say, NFL football, golf doesn't get nearly the eyeballs that the typical run-of-the-mill NFL game will on television. But it's the people who are watching, the demographic of the golfer, both domestically and international. It's such an excellent demographic, highly educated, high income. It's the kind of demographic that a lot of advertisers want to reach. And it filled that incredible void for advertisers and for financial services firms, for automobile manufacturers, for golf equipment companies. And I think the demographics of the golfing audience is what made it work.
Chris Millard is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're talking about his new book that's just been released, The Golf Book, as seen on the Golf Channel. And so what do you think, Chris, are some of the biggest challenges that the sport of golf faces right now, the future of golf?
Well, as you know, it's been a little rough for golf in the last, maybe the last 5 years. and I think a large part of that has been the economy. I mean, there's anything that costs a decent amount of money has taken a hit in the last 5 or 6 years. But looking ahead, how do we grow the game? You know, I look at my children and their friends, particularly my older child. She's 14, almost 15, and you know, they all enjoy cell phones and they enjoy being in touch electronically. I think golf got off to the wrong foot with digital technology. You know, when it first came out, people said, you can't have your cell phone on the golf course, or no calls on the golf course, no digital equipment on the course.
Right.
Well, try telling that. If you're trying to get the next generation of kids on the golf course and you're telling them it's a cell phone free environment, you're not going to get the kids on the golf course. So I'm as traditionalist as you can get, but I think we need to incorporate the whole digital lifestyle into the game. I think that'll go a long way towards bringing in the next generation.
Yeah, broaden our mindset. So what do you share in the book in terms of about Tiger Woods? I mean, obviously such a dominant player, so compelling. I mean, what did you share about him?
Well, really, we tried. I mean, you could, and people have written entire books just about Tiger. What we tried to do is put Tiger, his impact on the game, sort of in context. And I tried to kind of trace the arc of his career from when he first became known to golfers as the three-time U.S. amateur champion, to his arrival on tour, to the hype, which, amazingly enough, he not only met, but sort of, you know, super achieved beyond that. We tried to put that in context with his, you know, let's just look at purses. I mean, the money they're playing for in professional golf now is so over the top. If you're in 70th place on the money list, pre-Tiger, you know, it was a tough life. You weren't making that much money. The 70th guy on the money list in 2014 is making a fantastic living. And, that is largely due to Tiger, but you've also got to give Golf Channel credit because there were a lot of professional tour events on all the tours that were not getting on TV before the Golf Channel arrived. And when Golf Channel arrived, it gave those tours a way to value that content. And in valuing that content, everybody involved in the game benefited, including, you know, 80th and 90th place money list players.
Well, Chris, you certainly cover it all. I mean, we want to encourage the readers or their listeners tonight to go out and get a copy of the book. I mean, some very special moments from Justin Leonard to, of course, our beloved lefty, Phil Mickelson, and even what you focus on, golf architecture. So we are flat out of time. I want to encourage all the listeners tonight across the country to go out and get a copy of the book. It is titled The Golf Book, 20 Years of the Players, the Shots, and the Moments That Changed the Game. We've been visiting with Chris Millard of Golf World. Thank you so much, Chris.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Chris Millard's been joining us on the Stewart Cadillac guest line for the latest deals and models. Check out stewartcadillac.com. We will be right back. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are wishing each and every one of you a happy and very safe Halloween as we continue our recap of a very memorable season and World Series, the magnificent play of Madison Bumgarner leading the Giants to their third title in 5 years, and what a pitching performance. Tonight we have invited baseball historian and author Brian Ross, who has just released his new book. It is titled Baseball's Greatest Comeback, The Miracle Braves of 1940. We're going to be celebrating that book, reliving some of those amazing memories. Of course, Brian Ross is joining us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line. Stewart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Good evening, Brian. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Well, Brian, what an incredible World Series. And I thought after Game 6 that the momentum was on the Royals' side, but never, ever underestimate Madison Bumgarner. I mean, what he did, I'm not sure anyone could have predicted. Could you have predicted that?
No, I could not. That's the great thing about baseball. It's always so unpredictable. I mean, even if you look at the statistics leading up to the seventh game, you'd think, well, the home team is going to win that seventh game. I mean, those statistics favors the Royals, but the Giants turned everything around, and they were able to do it. And, of course, with this great, great pitching that you talked about, yes, Madison Bumgarner, he's up there, and is one of the all-time greats now, and World Series pitching history. I mean, he's up there with Sandy Koufax and Bob Gibson and the great Christy Mathewson from the dead ball era, the era that I studied the most about. I mean, this Christy Mathewson was unbelievable. And in 1905, he pitched, it's hard for us to understand, but he pitched 3 shutouts in 5 games over 6 days. And he's considered the number one of all. But Madison Bumgarner's moving right up there.
Absolutely. I mean, Madison, I mean, it was a performance we will never forget. Our producer, Andy Pondilla, we were talking about that earlier, and that, you know, perhaps, is he the greatest World Series pitcher?
I think Christy Mathewson is still number one. But I mean, and there's Bob Gibson, too. 1967, he pitches 3 complete games, and he wins them all. So there are some, I mean, there's some tough competition out there, but he's right up there at the top. I mean, he's close to the top. You know, one person that people don't talk much about, I haven't heard them speaking about today, and it was actually quite similar, believe it or not, is Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth was a pitcher before he became a hitter, and a great hitter, and he was in 2 World Series and won 3 games. He had this ERA similar to Madison Bumgarner. So imagine if Madison Bumgarner were next year to switch to the outfield and then become the greatest hitter of all time. Then you'll understand the athletic ability of Babe Ruth. But the last few days were just phenomenal to watch.
It was exhausting, wasn't it, Brian?
It was. But I like that kind of exhaustion, that excitement. There's been so many great World Series over time, too, similar to that. And, there are a lot of them that I read about and think about and sense the drama. That's the great thing about baseball, I think, the drama you get to see in the World Series.
Baseball historian and author Brian Ross is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Here in a moment, we will be shining the spotlight on his new book, Baseball's Greatest Comeback, The Miracle Braves of 1914. And talking about Madison Bumgarner, I mean, he threw a complete game 3 days earlier. I was just thinking, he would come in, he'd pitch, a few innings, and he was totally locked in and was able to produce.
No, I think you're right. I think everybody, I think even Buster Posey, his catcher, thought he was going to only pitch for 3 innings or so. You're right. He was so locked in, he couldn't stop. He just needed to keep on pitching and did. And up to that last out, that was the most exciting of all. Of course, after Gordon had hit that single that he had turned into a 3-bagger, and so that was a tense moment. But yeah, it reminds me a little bit. There's another one. The ESPN has rated the one different World Series. I came across an article a few days ago, and I think they rate the 1991 World Series as one of the most exciting. And that's when Jack Morris demands that he go back and pitch after 9 innings, a 10th inning, and he's able to bring the Minnesota Twins to victory. That was in the 7th game. That was a great, great World Series, too, the 1991 World Series.
You are listening to the voice of Brian Ross right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, San Francisco wins their 3rd World Series in 5 years. And you are, Brian, you are a baseball historian. How does this title in 2014, how is it different than the other two?
Well, I think this one puts them in the category of a sort of of a dynasty, really. I mean, there are a few baseball dynasties out there, the 1950s Yankees, and in the time period that I studied, the Philadelphia A's, it was the Philadelphia A's of 1914, they had been a dynasty, winning 3 out of 4. So I think this game brings, I mean, when you win 3 titles in the last 5 years, it's a dynasty. So I think it puts them up another notch. It makes them different from the team that they were when they came into the series.
Well, it certainly was a tough way for the Royals to go out. I mean, your heart certainly goes out to Kansas City, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I was rooting for them because when I studied these
so
underdog
true,
teams,
yeah.
like the Boston Braves of 1914, and the Royals had many similarities, actually. I mean, the Braves had been out of the picture for 10 or 12 years, and the Royals, of course, had been out of the playoffs for 29 years, and I like the way the Royals play, too. They play the baseball of the dead ball era that I studied. They play the small ball with with bunting and stealing, especially. But they could, you know, they didn't steal as much as they usually did during the regular season. They just couldn't get on base because they're up against this great pitcher who wouldn't let them on base.
Hey, Brian Ross is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We want to connect with you online. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And you can always go back and listen to many of our compelling interviews on our podcast page. That's at yahoosportsradio.com. Right now, we're going to talk about Brian Ross's new book. It is Baseball's Greatest Comeback. And the reviews have been very, very strong, Brian. It certainly is an entertaining narrative of one of baseball's most amazing teams. Share about the book.
Oh, yes. Well, this team, the Boston Braves, had been miserable for 10 or 12 years in the early 1900s. They regularly were losing 100 games. They'd be over 50 games out of first place. Their attendance was always worse in the National League. And then in 1914, they got the star, Johnny Evers, from the Chicago Cubs, and they thought they were going to turn the season around. But it turned into more misery than ever before. And by mid-July, they were 15 games out of first place. And then they traveled from Boston to Chicago, and they did this by train at the time, and they stopped off in Buffalo for a minor league game, and they got crushed by the minor league team. So that became the turning point. All the players remembered that as the turning point in the season, and they started to win, and they beat an excellent team, the New York Giants at the time, led by John McCraw. They had been a phenomenal team in this time period. And they catch up to the Giants, and they pass them. They win the pennant by 10 games. And then they have to go up against this dynasty, the Philadelphia A's, who had won 3 out of the last 4 World Series, who had a great manager, Connie Mack, who basically had all stars at every position, who had a pitcher, Albert Bender, who pretty much did the same thing that Baumgartner did in this past year. He did it in 1911. He was an absolutely phenomenal pitcher. They had other great pitchers, and the Braves go up against this wonderful A's team, and they defeat them. So it was just a great, great comeback. And to add to that, too, the Braves were the second team in Boston. At the time, the Boston Red Sox and the Boston Braves were both in the city. But the Red Sox had won the World Series in 1912. They were a great team, and they had Fenway Park, and the Boston Braves had the worst stadium. Just 11,000 fans could fit in. But the owner of the Red Sox, Joseph Lehman, did a very gracious thing. He allowed the Boston Braves in 1914 to play in Fenway Park, this brand new iron and concrete stadium. So the Braves got to play a lot of the games, including the World Series, in Fenway Park, and that was just so thrilling for the fans of Boston and the fans of baseball across the country.
Well, I thought you did a beautiful job just capturing the last of first place rise of baseball's most resilient club. Of course, again, the title and the name of the book is Baseball's Greatest Comeback, The Miracle Braves of 1914. You can go online anywhere and get a copy of that. Of course, Brian Ross has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Congratulations, and we look forward to having you back on. Okay, Brian?
Okay, well, thank you very much, Alyssa.
Reminding all of you not to drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.